Okay, good morning. Thank you. And thank you. I'm covering you all this morning, you know that. We're not exactly on TCM time, but we're a little bit. So this morning, we are privileged to have Dr. Heiner Fruhoff with us. And before I introduce him, I just want to go through a couple of things that we need to know and a couple of thoughts on yesterday. Yesterday, we started our journey together. It was an intense day, I hope, a fun day for you. Did you all have a good time? I think the most exciting thing about yesterday, I mean, there were many exciting things, but when I heard Master Lu talk about body, mind, spirit, I don't think I've ever heard anybody peel the onion in that kind of way. I don't know if you have, but the idea of spirit and consciousness being the driving force, the reflection, or the body being the reflection of this kind of purpose and movement and creativity and spirit. And it gives us a whole different worldview in a way, doesn't it? Because there are no accidents. Remember? So one more time, please repeat after me. There are no accidents. Right? It's mind-boggling. There are no accidents. So once you can embrace that thought, everything becomes a sign. Everything is so different, isn't it? It's freeing. It's very freeing when you realize there are no accidents. So we know from the quantum physicists that everything is energy. And we know that energy has consciousness. And now we know consciousness has purpose, its own individual purpose. So worrying about what someone else is going to do, not so much anymore, right? They have a purpose. So it's very freeing, and I think that concept is good for all of us to adopt and adapt in a lifestyle that allows us to really take care of ourselves, practice, and understand health and well-being. So I still see too much hugging, though, I have to say. I have to say that. But that could be just me. I don't know. So here we are taking this journey. And remember one more thing. Everything is spirit. It's just in a different form. So once I said to Master Lu, does that mean Twinkies too? And he said, yes. Actually, yes. So think about that for the rest of the day. Okay, moving on. We want to be sure you fill out your evaluation forms. These are very important to us for the thoughts that you bring. It's a great cycle of energy. The reason we have Taste of TCM is because of the ideas that you bring through the evaluation form. So don't be afraid to be super creative. We read every one of them, good, bad, and indifferent, and they're just great. So please, I urge everyone to please fill this out as really an energy exchange for us, okay? So that would be great. In terms of your bags that you received and for our commitment to the CMEs, process up at the University of Buffalo, you have a summary of disclosures, and that will be in your form, in your bag as well. I think you have that. And let's see, is there anything else I need to say about all that? No. Good for me. One more thing. I wanted to say that tomorrow at 7 o'clock, we are privileged to have Brother Seif, who will do Qigong for us. Irma has stepped in for Josie Zoe so beautifully on Taoist stretching, and tomorrow Brother Seif will step in doing Qigong, okay? There he is, looking beautiful in baby blue, I have to say. Woo. My goodness. I'm Catholic, and I don't even know what to say. Okay. So buttons, as I used to say. Heiner Fruhoff, was born in Germany from a lineage of medical practitioners. We are pleased to have him on the East Coast. He doesn't come here very often. He's very busy in Portland and in China. And we're just so happy to have him here because he's a beautiful presence for us. And it turns out, we were talking about lineage last night. We were talking about, you know, parents and children and generations before us and after us. And to come from this sort of tradition of natural healing is part of Heiner's lineage. He has studied sinology, philosophy, comparative literature. He's been in Shanghai, Hamburg, Tokyo, and Chicago. And he earned his doctoral degree from the Department of East Asian Languages at the University of Chicago, I believe. And so with all of that background, just basically he's an overachiever. So get ready. A health crisis, like so many of us, a health crisis led us to a different path. It led us to, look more deeply at healing and how to help ourselves. And that's the same with Heiner. He had a serious health crisis, and it led him more deeply into the other side, not the academic and the mind side of TCM, but truly practicing trying to learn what could really help him. And in that process, in that life path that he chose and that was his spirit's purpose, he found himself deeper and deeper into Chinese medicine. And at this point, he is a walking encyclopedia of this incredible, fascinating knowledge of what the ancient acupuncture points mean and why they were created. And they too have purpose, don't they? They're just so beautifully done and so well put together. And we're just beginning to tease all the meanings out of that for our own civilization. So hopefully, I think we could apply what Master Liu usually says about chopsticks is in China. At first, they used to eat with forks, and then they became civilized and ate with chopsticks. So perhaps we've reached the limits of our technology in medicine, and perhaps we'll wake up and learn how to apply the beauty of this complete holistic system. So it's a great pleasure to introduce him. He won he received graciously, because we asked him to, the Bridges of Integration 2 years ago, and he is just a delight to listen to. He will be doing brain and degenerative disorders later this afternoon, and we'll do the post-conference tomorrow. So it is my pleasure to welcome Heiner Fruhoff today. So please welcome him.
Morning, everybody. Yeah, well, the overachiever thing, I am trying to, I thought I let that go 20 years ago. It's with great gratitude and humility that I'm here for the third time. I really greatly appreciate coming from the West Coast here and being with you today. And if anything, I'm standing here ashamed that I don't have enough for you. I always hate wasting people's time. And what I have is, normally with the PowerPoint presentation, I have something where I go slide by slide, whereas this time I don't want to be restrained by the slides, because that this is going to tell a similar story of what I'm telling here, and if you feel like what I'm telling you is boring, then you can watch that show over there. So just a little bit of mercy there. Very grateful. I love doing nothing more than speaking about Chinese medicine. That is truly a deep pleasure. And I'm standing here also with a sense of urgency, is that as an educator now in the Chinese medicine profession for 20 years, founding the Department of Classical Chinese Medicine, the School of Classical Chinese Medicine at the NCNM in Portland, the National College of Natural Medicine, I feel like that there is really, as we are moving forward with our industrialized rat race and living in the world in the way how we're doing, which is brings about a counter movement, and we're all part of that counter movement, but that in a certain way, the quality of that is a deteriorating. You know, like that we are getting that there is, we need to be much more radical in our approach to how we live our life, the advice that we're giving to our patients, and most importantly, with the way how we embrace our mandate as physicians and as educators in the medicine that is supposed to be truly holistic. And I'm speaking here from a perspective of a Chinese medicine educator, but if you're not from that profession, you can switch that, and just every time I say Chinese, it means holistic. You know, I'm giving you a presentation about the classics or what ancient people in any culture, I believe, found to be the foundation of any medicine, and hopefully I only arrived yesterday afternoon and unfortunately had to miss Nanlu's presentation, but it, from just what you just said, I think from another perspective, hopefully, we are talking about the same thing here. So the one of the wonderful people I visited in China, Professor Deng Jietao, he's one of the four elders, he's in his 90s, and lives in this completely unassuming small apartment on the campus of Guangzhou University of TCM, and is one of my heroes because he said Chinese medicine, and he says that to every visitor that comes to him, he says, is more important than our own lives to embrace, to advance the purpose of that, because we are all like a drop in the ocean, and we only fulfill our purpose if we sense our part in this ocean, rather than just thinking about what we want to do as the single droplet. And so, yeah, you were just talking about the sense of mandate and destiny. The word Ming also means command. You know, destiny means command, means urgency, means we really have to throw ourselves into that. The one of the ways how I, because of my personal education, have done that is through the classics of Chinese medicine. And so from a perspective, I'm a medical anthropologist other than just a practitioner, but I'm really talking about what is ancient sage wisdom that people who sat in caves for 20 years and experienced in their body what the universe was transmitting to them directly, when they felt there was not one iota wasted, then they would write it down at the end of their life. And that is what ancient people called the classics. And they weren't called, you know, Mr. So-and-so's book on what I think about life. It was called the Yellow Emperor or something, meaning you saying this is a transmission directly from the universe itself. And it is not anachronistic. It does behoove us in these modern times to look at the classics, because we are, see, I come from Europe, and as such, I'm married to an American woman, and I live on the West Coast in the city of how do they call that, PC, political correctness, and that's why I like to be sometimes on the East Coast. You can speak a little bit more freely. It's not immediately, oh, I can't believe he just said that. And there's so many taboos and rules in this country, especially over there, about all kinds of kind of things where you can put your foot in your mouth there. But it is... The one thing that I find is strange is that in this scientification of our modern lives, where everything gets measured by the rule stick of science, it is very easy. Nobody thinks anything about that. It's kind of dissing ancient things as kind of Stone Age, stupid barbarians type of things. And in a certain way, the medicine that every person who studies Chinese medicine, when you feel the pulse, you look for the kidney pulse, because the kidney pulse is like the root on the tree, and we all know if the root of the tree is rotten, the branches will not last long. And so it is for any ancient civilization, the view into the past was infinitely more important than the view into the future, because it is that what the Buddhists call yingguo, which is you plant that kind of a seed, you nourish this kind of a root, you will harvest that kind of a fruit. It's not possible, as one of my teachers said, that you plant bitter melon seed and then you're harvesting a sweet pumpkin. You know, it's like one, and that is true for our lives as well. You know, it's like if you complain about how our life is now and how ill we are, we should go back and look at what we did 20 years ago, what we ate, what we thought, what our daily habits are, and of course, you know, our whole tribal consciousness and the miasms that come with that. And so it is one of the noteworthy and honorable qualities of ancient medicine that it looks into the past and honors our ancestors and the wisdom that is in there. And that wisdom, and I'm speaking here not as a medical anthropologist, I'm standing here as somebody who was dreadfully sick, and I wanted to get better, no matter what it takes. So everything I'm talking to you about comes from a perspective of clinical usefulness, meaning if that wisdom is being embraced, you will have better results clinically in your medicine. It might be more confusing in the beginning to embrace some nebulous concept that people had 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago. But if we really start looking into that, respecting it, we will start seeing things that we didn't see before. As one of the wings of the I Ching says, 仁者见智谓之仁，智者见智谓之智. Means if you read this book, this classic, even though it's ancient, this was already 2,000 years ago written like this, and possibly Confucius himself wrote that. If you read it with the eyes of love and respect, all you will see is a love that beams from these pages at you. If you read it with the eyes of wisdom, and that wisdom, that word zhi, means humility. Literally, the Chinese character for zhi, for wisdom, is a water virtue. You know, the Chinese organized everything in terms of the five elements, and so benevolence is compassion, love that goes with wood because it's like springtime, infuses you like that, as a quality like that. Whereas wisdom, the true wisdom, is not arrogance and saying I've got 3 degrees, therefore I'm better than you and know more than you. But it is like Confucius said, if I'm in a room with 2 people, my teacher for sure is among those. And so the word zhi means to know by making yourself low. It's literally the word to know, and then you have the sun underneath. You put your sun low rather than saying, look, here's my wisdom sun that shines brighter than anybody else's. So that is part of the classical way of transmission, is through the symbols of the characters itself. Every Chinese character, every Egyptian hieroglyphic is like a Pandora's box, and it tells a story. My students are always somewhat afraid if I say, oh, let's look at the character for liver, because they know I'm not going to get out of that Pandora's box for another hour or so, because there's a whole story in there. And so that also means if you look at these classics with arrogance and you say there's nothing interesting in there, then of course you will see nothing. But if you flip the pages, you will just see a bunch of Stone Age barbarians who didn't know what they were talking about, and they didn't have microscopes and CT scanners yet, and therefore you know, what it's interesting for a historian, but not for a medical scholar to study that. And that is a very big issue. You know, I am, from my perspective, I perceive myself as a scientist. I spent a lot of time, 11 years or more, in graduate schools in all kinds of places. And it's very interesting, when I was still at the University of Chicago, there wasn't a grant that you couldn't get with, you know, you were, and now I'm at this, in this podunk profession, in this podunk school, in a podunk state. And all of a sudden, it's like you applying for something where you feel like you've achieved a depth layer that you never had before, but all of a sudden, it's like you tainted with something. Like, I'm presently applying for a grant at the National Library of Medicine, and it's somewhat normal that you get rejected the first time, somewhat normal you get rejected the second time, and it's very, you know, they good people there that review that, and they look at the, then they give you very detailed feedback if you make it, you know, have a point system. And in the beginning, it was like, your bibliography is not complete enough. Your such and such should be shorter. You should be focusing more on that. Do you have a publisher? But then the third time was all cleared up. And then the only thing remaining is, I don't believe, because it's, of course, this is the thing that we have nowadays in China as well as here. Alternative medicine, great, but not on its own terms. It needs to be under the jurisdiction and through the lens of Western medicine and Western science, and all of the people who are the arbiters of these, where the money goes, they come from that kind of profession. And so in the end, it was just this statement, unfortunately, we most likely can't give you this grant because we do not believe that study of the ancient classics has any merit whatsoever for modern clinical practice. You know, which is, of course, even if you don't read the classics, we know as a Chinese medicine practitioner that everything we do, they're re-empowered in a certain way by what came down through the pike from the ancestors and the sages of Chinese medicine. So we need to approach these things with true wisdom and gain true knowledge, but it can't happen without humility. And go like, maybe there is something that I can learn from that. And we see that science is always oriented toward the future. And we get excited with the sci-fi movies. And every year we throw our Merck manual away, because what was true today and the standard of care is all of a sudden not true anymore the next year. And whereas in art, in philosophy, in religion, it's perfectly normal that you are looking backward. In a certain way, that even that you acknowledge that the golden age of those sciences is in the past. And so you've got movies in that Chinese medicine practitioners like to watch, like Heroes, or, you know, just sort of watch Heroes is a great movie because it's about the time in China when the Huang Di Neijing, the Yellow Emperor's classic of Chinese medicine, was written. So the classics are a repository of this kind of wisdom that wasn't just like today. Everybody who feels like they have something to say, they have a blog, or if the publisher doesn't publish it, I self-publish. We are so drowned in information that we cannot see what is the important stuff anymore. In ancient times, a Chinese medicine doctor, they only had one or two or three classics, and they would memorize them and read them over and over again and let them stimulate their way of thinking. Because the classics are never a cookbook. That's actually the frustration of the modern practitioner and why we do away with that. Because it's like, I want to know how to learn to treat headaches. There's only these 13 strange herbal formulas in the Huang Di Neijing, and gives mostly a philosophical book and talks about the stars and the sun, the moon, the weather, and I don't understand what that is about. I want to learn how to, you know, I want to take so-and-so seminar who, after one weekend, says, "You all, no matter what, you always go and use this procedure, it'll always work," right? But that is exactly what the classics do. It's like it's this matrix of inspiration, of transmission, of ancient wisdom, of how the universe works, and your body and your patient's bodies within that universe works. And how in every situation, if you're plugged into that matrix, you can get that sense of inspiration from there. The actual character for classic in Chinese medicine is Jing. It's the same, you know, Jing Dian. Jing as in the Jing Luo, as in the meridian. So the word for classic and the word for meridians is the same, which is kind of interesting. Jing also is another word for Tao. So the movement of the stars is also a part of, you know, the classic path, meaning this unwavering law of nature that never happens. Like things that would be in the classic, the sun comes up in the morning and sets at night. There's no difference now than it was 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago. Talking about the five elements, there is a brilliant way of assessing if you take what is written in all classics, starting with the very first one in China, which is the I Ching, the Book of Change, or the Book of Symbols, as I like to call it, the classic of symbolic way of looking at the world, is to divide reality into five different spaces, or five different categories, or five different density patterns. And that is, and you'll see it pass by at some point, it's Tao on the very left, Qi next to it, meaning the Tao and the Qi that we've all heard about, the way, the universal principle, that the universal intelligence that every small microbe, every atom is... the laws of that are in that. Then qi is energy, you know, and or function, but it's still in the realm of the invisible. And then we've got xiang, is a very interesting word. Originally means elephant, but is means symbol or means image or picture. Okay? And then we have xing, which means physical form. And then we have qi, which is not energy, again means vessel. It's literally four pots with stuff guarded by a dog in the middle. And so you've got this very much like we know we have this, the Chinese have this idea that the, or any ancient people, that our body is matter, and that matter, in that matter is not only energy, but that energy governs the functions of the physical body. Actually, the word function is contained in that word qi. And that energy doesn't stop there. Behind that is a spirit or consciousness. And so the from a perspective in our own life, we could say everything that we do, whether we... I mean, sometimes I have the great fortune to live in... most amazing place in the countryside in Oregon, with a mountain in my back and a river in the front, with lots of green around, and in a house that is resonant. It's like a violin that when you play one Stradivari, the other one will start singing along with that. You know, so ancient building. I had the great fortune to have David Yarborough design the great. Best American student of Keith Critchlow, who's the master sacred geometry architect in London. And he designed my house on his deathbed at the culmination of his career at age 75, and still making all the plans by hand. And so you've got all of these numbers in there that you have in the cathedral in Chartres. So, and it is not a mental thing. I'm a very metal type, and I'm sometimes... rigid, and you know, have this aesthetic idea, but it blew me away how it actually as a physical entity works. People walk in that house and they go like, "I don't know what it is, but I just want to sit quietly." So it really feeds you, and the walls are made from earth, and the light shines in and makes different colors on the wall as the day goes on, and it it is Yes, why am I talking about my house? It's entertaining, I suppose, and I'm glad I can take you home with me, but there was a point. I'll come back to that point. I'll guarantee you. What all the classics, this is the classical way of constructing reality, is that you have one side that is like the Tao and the Qi, which is like you've got invisible, you've got the intelligence of the universe. That's what the Chinese call the Tao. You've got the consciousness, you've got the mind of the universe, which then puts energy, creates a kind of energy that is a formative energy. I think Rupert Sheldrake has some kind of name for that. He calls it the morphogenic fields, you know, where he's this British biologist, and he says before you've got biochemistry, you've got biophysical fields around that, and you can, in a salamander, it's not the biochemical and the genetics that form that. It's this energetic field that holds the command of how that salamander cell is further developing. And then that's why I was talking about my house, is because I'm in that house and I'm going like, how did this happen? You know, why am I blessed and I'm being in this? I mean, because the logistics of anything material is tremendous. To move all this earth, to kind of, you know, there's not a single plywood thing in there, and every, you know, even the caulk and the windows is had to, this German guy had this formula where he mixed it himself so that it wasn't off-gassing, and everything is like that. Everything starts like a spirit seed. You feel like some kind of urge in your heart, you just have to do it, and then you energy, more energy is behind that, and then you form a mental image. You know, that's what that xiang is. It's you see it clearly in your mind's eye, and then it starts taking shape, and then it becomes a physical reality. So those are the five stages of how everything in our private lives, as well as in the evolution of the universe as a whole, is taking shape. And what the ancient people are saying, what the sages that are, and why does it behoove us to listen to the sages once again, is because our body is made of matter. We are vessels. Even the senses that we perceive energy with, our brain, our heart, our nervous system is made out of matter. And therefore, I always tell my students, and I might have even mentioned it in this forum, everything we touch turns to matter. Okay? Because, and that is in a certain way what science is. So we have measuring objects that are made from matter, and we're measuring matter in the sense of what the I Ching says, if you look at the classics from a perspective of matter, with the eye lenses of matter, all you see will be descriptions of the matter side of reality, when the classics are specifically is sagely observation of a guolai ren, of somebody who's on the other side. You know, like, I don't know, you know, how real the details of the story are of fourth uncle in the mountain, but I recommend it to every practitioner of holistic medicine, because I believe the story that Dr. Phan Nguyen, a Vietnamese barefoot doctor, tells in there is quite reflective of how a holistic medicine practitioner, whether there was a Native American shaman or whether it was an Egyptian priest or whether it's a Chinese medicine doctor, was trained in the past. You would train with your grandfather, with your father, but at a certain stage in your training, you would go into an extreme circumstance that dramatically alters your insight into the nature of reality and catapults you out of this King Midas grip of everything is just matter. You know, King Midas, by the way, was a guy in ancient Greece who said, if I could only, everything I can touch would turn to gold. I would be the richest person in the world. And of course, he'd touch his daughter and she turned to gold. And he touched his food and turned to gold. And he all of a sudden felt like he was dying and suffocating in this world of matter. And that is why we are turning to alternative medicine today is because there is a promise for something else. But in that process, even most education in holistic medicine, Chinese medicine included, often kind of looks at this phenomenon through the lenses of matter and tries to deepen our trust by using all kinds of probes and devices and convincing ourselves how scientific this superstitious, seemingly superstitious thing really is. Okay? So if you just do something simple, like fasting for 2 weeks, or you're dramatically alters your state of consciousness. If you are in a cave for 3 years, like in this book, or for 20 years, like his father was, I can guarantee you, and I've met enough of those people, to know that. You know, when you sit in those people's presence, it's not the same. Okay? It is like those people can see something very much like the Neijing says. Shen, spirit, oh spirit, the light of spirit. The person on the left doesn't see it. The person on the right doesn't see it. But to the person in the middle who has the eyes to see, it's as clear as daylight. It's when you see the clouds move, you know that the wind must be blowing. You know, if you look at the moon shining at night, you know that the sun is still shining and hasn't died because it's a reflection of that. So on that level, you see the hand of energy and spirit in everything, and you can see that energy and that consciousness directly, and that's all you're interested in. And the classics, therefore, are a reminder to dense people like ourselves, myself first and foremost included, is were we not we like children? We mired in this realm of matter, and we can't see the other side. Now, with you, if I go to a city like Baghdad or so, I want to have a guide. I want to have somebody who've been there before, and I trust them. So in our medicine, it's important to have a guide that shows you the way into these spaces of reality that we've never ventured into. And because in modern times, it's not like in ancient India where there was a sadhu at every corner, a holy man who had, you know, worked with his body and could miraculously overcome Newtonian laws and see, look at the energy directly and do amazing things with his or her consciousness. It is... In the modern times, there are very few of those kinds of people. And as a result of it, it even more so behooves us to read the classics because that is the words of ancient sages who had this kind of training and talk the science of how you diagnose spirit, how you diagnose energy, how you treat spirit, and how you treat energy. Because not only do these stages coexist, it's not just matter, there's matter and there's energy and there's consciousness. But that the energy in the consciousness is the root of matter. So it's hierarchically higher. And therefore, if you're really a holistic medicine practitioner, you won't do away, of course, with the lab test. You won't say Western science is all a bunch of baloney. But you won't stop there. You will say that everything that happens in the realm of biochemistry and anatomy is a symbol that points back at the energy and the consciousness that's behind it. And for those, it's so subtle that our still pretty crude devices cannot pick that up. But our bodies can pick that up, and that's why we have this dilemma nowadays, and that's why most of us are here, whether we're an MD or a Chinese medicine practitioner or a massage therapist, is because there is a market out there where the regular, you take people's blood, you take an ultrasound, and this is what happened to me. I went to the University of Chicago Hospital, and I said, I do Tai Chi, I'm a young person, I understand my body, I'll eat a healthy diet, but I feel terrible. I know there is something wrong with me. And they took my blood, and they scanned me from top to bottom, and they said, there's nothing wrong with you. Maybe you need to take, you know, a sleeping pill at night, you're just stressed out or something. And so many of our patients are like that, you know. So what is that? If I feel terrible, our body is producing a picture, a symbol, an alarm light that says energetically meaning on some functional level, that of course already has a biochemical or hormonal reality to it, but it's so minute that our more crude devices can't pick that up. But the minute you have a symptom, it's a sign there's something wrong with you. Okay? And so why not treat it at that point? It had to wait for a year until there was something where it was like, oh, now, tomorrow, you have to be operated on, because finally that thing was big enough in me that they could see it on their scans or some marker in the blood had gone up. And so that is, of course, our, in the Neijing, one of the things it says, Zhiwei, being the principle of treat disease that hasn't manifested yet. There's this famous, when I left China, one of my teachers gave me this calligraphy of that quote, which is, if you are drilling a well when you're already thirsty, or when you start forging weapons when the battle has already begun, isn't that too late? Question mark. You know, so that is what we're doing, is we, that's our strength, to treat diseases when the patient already just has symptoms, nothing else, supposedly they just need to take a Prozac and they're all fine. Or, of course, if you have cancer and you radiate and you operate and then you're surprised why the cancer is coming back, that is the domain of alternative medicine, because you are trying to diagnose the energy and the consciousness that forms that tumor in the first place. And if you just take the tumor out directly and not removing the energetic patterns, then, of course, it's going to come back. You know? So, and that's where these, yeah. So the classics, from the biggest perspective, therefore, they are telling us what is the root of existence, which is precisely that which is the most subtle. That which is most important is the most subtle, and it's invisible. You cannot see it with our regular eyes. You cannot hear it with our regular ears. But that is why in our medicine, in truly holistic medicine, is this is your instrumentation. Our body is your scientific instrument. The reason why the Neijing, Huangdi Neijing, is called the Neijing, the classic that tells you about the Tao through the internal methodology, rather than Wai Jing, which would be external, by observing the outside world and going finer and finer and distinguishing viruses from bacteria and then lots of viruses from each other and genetic code and, you know, going finer and finer. That is the external path. Whereas the truly holistic path includes and most importantly works with the internal path, which means nothing. Everything needs to be real. It can't just be an intellectual insight. You need to feel it in your body. And you always, and you refine your body's awareness. Every subtle thing, you put your hands on a patient, and whether it feels numb or cold or hot, you're not going, I'm just imagining it, or if it's real, you think it's irrelevant. All of that is a symbol that tells you about, you know, like when you scan somebody, you feel them, when your hand goes slightly numb or tingles, that's usually damp. You know, that there is a type of, that's a sign that that patient has damp congestion in their connective tissue. And you can feel that. It's not rocket science. Enlightenment is not something like if you take enough darshan or something, all of a sudden all hell breaks loose and you are on the other side. It is these things where when you're in love or you're particularly deep meditation and you have this deep insight and download, or all of a sudden you change your life, those are the moments where you are having it fully dialed in. And all of us have that capacity. So don't make pictures. Other people can do it. I can't. We all can, and we do it all the time. We just go in and out of it, and we're more out of it than in of it. And part of the holistic training is, how do I stay longer and longer in this dialed-in space until I'm more in it than out of it? Okay? So in a certain way, that's why physicians of the classical era, including some people like Zhang Xichun, who's one of my heroes, because he practiced when Western medicine had already come into China in the 1920s, and worked with Western medicine medication. Like, he has a whole materia medica of quinine and aspirin and those kinds of things. And you would do, if they would have existed at that time, you would have done it with antibiotics and steroids also, by classifying them like Chinese herbs and saying, biochemically, I don't care, but energetically, this goes into this meridian and is cooling and rises the energy or makes it go down. And then you even created remedies like aspirin jia shi gao tang, which is aspirin plus gypsum decoction, where you literally took a Western medication like an herb and boiled it with a Chinese substance, natural substance, and then gave it to the patient. You know, so it's not that we cannot use Western medicine, but we need to know what is our foundation, which is energetic medicine, which is the energy is ruling the matter. And if I don't know about the energetics of something and I only know about the biochemistry of something, and that is why so many drugs are failing in practice. In the beginning, they work, and then all of a sudden, person gets allergic to, and then it even becomes toxic to you, and people can't fully explain that because in the lab it works so great. That is because we're completely in the dark about energetically how does that affect those really subtle places in the body that affect our way of well-being more than some of these more crude substances. So Zhang Xichun said, and that article is posted on, I have a website called classicalchinesemedicine.org, and have lots of translations from the classics and video teachings from some of my teachers in China, and you know there's about 20 more hours about what I'm talking about today in writing as well as in video there, and including his article, Medicine is Philosophy, is in there, Zhang Xichun's article under the classics rubric. And this really means our medicine is idea medicine. It's energy medicine. It's consciousness medicine. It's spirit medicine. It never is cookbook medicine. It's never technique medicine. It is also that, but not first and foremost. Okay? And so the classics are invisibility medicine. It is from people, written by people who can see energy clearly. And if you practice a little bit yourself, and then you practice a little bit more yourself, like you go to China for a month or so, like we do every year with various students of mine, and you go into a monastic setting or in a special place, and you fast, and you do not just 10 minutes of yoga, but you do 3 hours of Qigong, and then you do 2 hours of chanting, and then you eat special food on top of it, and then you don't talk during the day. Just something simple is like you come out on the other end. It's like a rocket ship. You're like in a different place. And there are people, what we call the sages, people like you and me, they've just put in more time than you and I. And maybe there was a different time in ancient times where there were no video games and no cell phones and no internet, etc. So you would... That was a fun thing to do, go in the cave, and then you stay there. And in the beginning, like in Fourth Uncle in the Mountain, the guy gets locked in this cave with this old dude at age 16, and he freaks out and cries and wants to leave, but he can't. And after 3 years, he doesn't want to go back, you know, because you are in resonance with the universal energy, and there is nothing, you're plugged in, there is nothing else that could be more fun in a certain way. Even though for us, the thought of being locked in a cave for even an hour, it would be terrifying. I remember my dear friend Theo Elijah, who was also speaking here at the conference. We were at some, you know, like sages come in different forms, and there was Sufi master speaking, who is devoting his life to this kind of cultivation. And she said, why is that, you know, like, it would be better not to be singing and dancing all the time. And the teacher who was from Jerusalem said, my beloved, it is not because I want you to have no fun. I want you to have the real fun. It's, you know, he was saying, it's like, if you just quiet, you hear some kind of music you had no idea that existed before. And it's not like kind of this ascetic type of existence, but that's also Confucius' method, who that poor guy got the worst rap. Lao Tzu is cool and Confucius sucks. That's what we often think. But Confucius was really, he was a master of this. The idea of the classics in Chinese medicine come from him. And he said, ritual without fun is not real ritual, you know. So that means everything we're talking about here is not some kind of dogmatic rule, but it is about fun, meaning every and full body experience that is speechless and can't be really be described in words. Okay. So, what Zhang Xichun wrote a book that is called Yixue Zhongzhong Canxi Lu, which is means medicine in the modern age, where we use Zhong, Chinese medicine of the center, as our foundation, and then we use Western medicine as a reference point. Okay? And so this is something that's very important. You know, this is conference is aptly named Building Bridges, and it is aptly conducted in a way that the bridge is not, oh, as alternative medicine practitioners, we are just building this bridge and then we all becoming westernized by kind of doing lab research and studies that proves what we're doing is right, but we are focusing on traditional practices, including Qigong, that enables us to read the major classic of nature itself. Okay? Our body is a classic in a certain way, and thereby inviting people from the other side of the bridge to come over here, because there's so much that in this modern world where all of us, including people in holistic medicine, have been brainwashed into wearing these lenses where everything is just matter, where everything is arbitrary. You said at the beginning, there are no accidents, which means everything has a purpose. Okay? And that is what science has really catapulted us in a state of where nothing has purpose anymore. Everything is just a bunch of molecules, and they're not pointing at anything. They're not a representation of another realm. They are just that, and we can manipulate it, and it is a way of thinking about the world, about medicine and how we treat our world, that we extract all of the resources, that we pollute our world, that we pollute our bodies. All of that comes from that way of thinking, because we are not looking at the world as something sacred that has a purpose. I might not understand that purpose, but rather than having some system that proves that there is no purpose and I can just do some genetic research and arbitrarily shoot, literally, that's what that is. When you hear about genetic cloning, it's you take a gun and you shoot that into zucchini to see what happens, you know, and then something merges in the DNA and then you kind of speed up evolution in that way by creating something that maybe some genetic material from here goes into that. But so he was saying Chinese medicine is a foundation and Western medicine you can use as a tool. By all means, use the CT scanners. By all means, use the ultrasounds or so. But then what you see, learn how to interpret that in terms of energy and consciousness rather than just look at that tumor as a piece of matter, and if you take that piece of matter out, you're all done. We know it's not true. If it was true, you wouldn't be sitting there, I wouldn't be speaking here. There is something else there that we got to be out there. So the interesting thing, and here I regret that I do not have that, is the character for tea, what Zhang Xichun was saying, qi and yun is another way of saying yin and yang. Yang is the realm of the invisible, yin is the world of the visible. And he was saying qi and yun, the word qi means body, including our physical body. And he says the classics are our foundation. Our physical body is the foundation. For what? For containing, and this is what makes our body meaningful and gives it purpose and gives us a mandate for the containment of spirit. Okay? So our body from that perspective is a vessel for the containment of spirit. The classics are a vessel for containment exclusively of revealing the quote-unquote spirit world, the consciousness, the mind of the universe, and how it energetically works, and therefore has a totally different language that if you approach that with the eyes of science and linear thinking, it seems like great-great-grandpa is telling his had Alzheimer's and is talking about something that makes me dizzy and doesn't make any sense to me. But if you approach it respectfully, it has a power of transmission that will sink in. The bird ti and the word li are very similar. Li is among the five ancient virtues, is the virtue of fire, and is the virtue of the heart. The Chinese say xin ren xin ye. The heart is the human heart. What makes us fully human is the function of the heart. And as described in the classic, in chapter 8 of the Yellow Emperor's classic, what is the purpose of the heart, which is called the emperor of the organ networks, is it shen ming chu yan. It connects us with the world of spirit. So we're living in an animal body with animal functions. We breathe, we eat, we defecate, we procreate, etc. But if we get stuck on this level, we in a certain world, when an animal is out there and that's all it does, eating, shitting, procreating, and in that process even killing other animals, we show that on National Geographic TV and we go like, wow, that's so beautiful when that puma is hunting down the gazelle or the as humans, we have different laws that apply because we are not just made of the earth. We are made of an earth that contains spirit. Okay? That is why we are going to talk in a little bit about the importance of the number 5 for Chinese medicine diagnostics, which is symbolically the earth number. Okay, and that that's basically 5 is the number of love and is the number of the first yin number 2 and the first yang number 3. 2 plus 3 is 5. So what you're diagnosing with the 5-element system and what you're treating with that is you assessing the movement of energy and spirit in matter. So that is what we are as humans. We are consciousness in matter. So it is our job, our mandate, is to be fully human and distinguish ourselves from plants and stones and animals, is to live in this world consciously, to become, in a certain way, to have our heart resonate with the heart of the universe itself. And when we don't do that, which we have the choice to do, guess what? Then you get sick. So in a certain way, I once wrote an article that's called All Disease Comes from the Heart. So in a certain way, all chronic disease in modern times is that. It's this matter, King Midas disease, where we're paying our mortgages and driving our cars, and that's all fine. But if that's all we are doing and we're not going like, I've got this limited time in this lifespan, and I'm symbolically supposed to recreate the evolution of the universe itself by becoming conscious, because the creation of humanity itself is a place where the universe itself is reaching its own consciousness, and we are the symbol for that. We are the consciousness of the universe. If we don't choose to embrace that, we're going against our mandate, we're going against our heart, which is, as the classic says, Shen Ming Shu Yan, which is sole purpose is not to beat in the chest and pump the blood. That is the stomach and the lung and the pericardium, what we call like that in Chinese medicine, that is talking about that pump. What we call the heart in Chinese medicine is, and you can see that from the character, it doesn't have a flesh radical. It is very clearly not a physical entity in the anatomical sense, but it is our ability to connect and see directly and live in that space and praise it and observe it and treat from that place, that's what is called the heart. And in order to do that, the virtue in the five virtue system, if you have time at the end, I want to tell you a little bit about a group of healers that is in a certain way the highest form of healing. You don't even need to use herbs. You don't need to use your hands and massage. You don't need to use needles to move that energy. You directly affect the consciousness. Okay? And so they do that by what they call five virtue therapy. You work with the spirit directly is always the highest form of medicine. So never, the minute you arrogantly dismiss something as a placebo effect, it makes, in this day and age, where we know so many things, they just haven't fused. I mean, with biophysics and Friedrich Capra already wrote his stuff in the 1970s, even science itself is realizing that anatomy and biochemistry is not the answer. But medicine is still this heavy, dense field that is lagging like 50 years behind the other sciences. You know, we already have like sciences of bioelectromagnetism and all of this stuff out there, but we still choose to think about these clumsy molecules that join in the body and you take a substance and 6 hours later it supposedly does something in our body. And how could homeopathy not work because there's no chemical molecules in it? It's you taking a homeopathic remedy, you're taking pure energy. You're taking the distilled energy of a plant. And if the more sensitive and refined you are, the more you feel how that does affect you. And yes, it's a science. It's very precise. You take the wrong remedy, it doesn't do a thing. You know? So yes. So in order for the heart to be open, this is a big misunderstanding in modern times. You know, we are all children of the New Age and in a certain way of the 60s. Where living with an open heart means I get to do whatever the fuck I want to do. Okay? Excuse my language, but then once again, it's my understanding that I'm not on the West Coast here. So there, whereas it's precisely the opposite. It's like the virtue of the heart. The virtues are like pentatonic, like Pythagoras described the harmony of the spheres. The ancient Chinese believed there were these five positive rays that are infusing everything on Earth and that keep us alive. And it's, of course, billions of rays, but there's like bundled and described symbolically in this way. And one is like springtime, and that is compassion and love and warmth and healing. And one is like fire, and it's like summer, which is prospering and reverence and ritual and remembrance. And one is like fall, when nature voluntarily surrenders itself and restrains its own selfish impulse to want to keep going higher and faster and more. It'll take itself down so that there can be a new beginning again later. And so voluntarily bows and voluntarily dies. And so the virtue that is like that, resembling that, is Yi, which literally is a sheep, the most benevolent and, most Chinese characters that have something about goodness, Shan, Mei, for instance, Yi, beauty, goodness, selflessness, brotherhood, sisterhood, justice, equality, all of them, they have the so-called radical component in the character, which is the sheep. The sheep, we have goats now, it's even though people can say, once again, through the lens of matter, that's for anatomical reasons, but it is almost moves you to tears when you see that little goat, and when it drinks the milk, it kneels down in front of his mother. You know, it drops down to its knees, and to the Chinese, that was a symbol of gratitude. And that is why we, when in sacrifice, animal sacrifice, you In most countries, especially in the Middle East, you use goats and sheep because they do not complain. A pig will squeal and a cow will be afraid or so, but the goats and the sheep, they cue to have their throat slit, you know, so it doesn't, so it's easier. So all of that together, it makes it a symbol of selflessness and surrender. And so the virtue of metal is selflessness. It's this kind of letting go of our attachments. And then the virtue of water is a wisdom, which is the wisdom that comes from humility. And then the central wisdom, we'll talk about that in a second, is shin, is trust, is faith, is integrity. That, for the human being especially, is central. When it comes to keying in to this classical way, the sage way of thinking, if you want to know energy, if you want to know consciousness, without humility, without trust and belief, you can't get there. And so Li is sort of the ability to see light and spirit and joy and beauty in everything, but it comes from this. Li really means ritual, it means politeness, it means appropriateness, meaning the heart can only see the spirit world if it is not in a state of selfishness, but if it is in a state of deep surrender and in a state of ritual presence, in a state of deep politeness with the universe. And coming back to what you said at the very beginning, there are no accidents is a good example. If somebody hits me from behind in the car and I go like, damn, I can't believe, why did this happen? Of all days, you know, while in the realm of matter, the police car will come and the insurance company of that person in the back will hopefully, these times are also changing, but hopefully in the laws of matter, which are like Newtonian laws, is the person who hits you from behind, no matter what they pay, right? My mother always said this, you know, how you sometimes remember these things from your childhood. She said, "Wenn's hinten kracht, gibt's vorne Geld," which means if you have a boom in the back, you get money in the front. So it just means don't let anybody. If I first was driving, she said, it's like, don't let them talk to you into anything and make you feel bad. If they hit you from behind, they're going to pay. That's what she was trying to say when I was an 18-year-old driver. But energetically, you know, like I remember the model of this 95-year-old Wang Fengyi practitioner was, of course, osteoporotic in Beijing or so. It's a completely different model. It's a model of self-responsibility, deep humility, and ritual presence. And she would go on the street and be hit by this 18-year-old reckless kid who drives her down with a bicycle, completely was his fault. And he said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Do you need to go to the hospital?" And she said, "No, don't worry. It was my fault. If I would have stayed at home, this wouldn't have happened." You know. So this is everything that happens for a reason, is a reminder that there is something in you right now that is extracting that and is a koan by the universe to help you come out of what you're not seeing at the moment. So never say, fuck the universe, I'm not accepting this. Why? I'm blaming my parents, I'm blaming my husband, I'm blaming or my wife, or I'm blaming everybody but myself. That way you will be stuck in that. And you think it's all arbitrary, and for some kind of strange reason, it's happening to you. Well, the universe is a benevolent universe, and it will bring you things that are perfect for you at the moment. And you might not recognize the purpose now, but you will later. The two diseases that almost killed me, I was energetically walking around like this all the time and go like, why? I'm a good person. I don't deserve this. I have things to do. I'm smarter than other people. I have work to do, right? But it was without that, I wouldn't be in this medicine. And without that, I would be dead. It is. So in retrospect, I don't want to miss the cancer. I don't want to miss the inflammation of the heart muscle. So every 10 years, sort of a big wake-up call. So everything that seems arbitrary is really not arbitrary. But that requires a state of li, of ritual presence and politeness with the universe directly, what it gives us. With every person we meet, we have yuanfen. One of my teachers always says, what a miracle we all in the same room together, of all the places where we could be in the world right now, I'm here with these people. That's not arbitrary. You've got yuanfen. You've got somehow the whirlpool of the universe has brought you here for a purpose. You know, and particularly, doesn't matter if you're ecstatic, celebrated. If you're bored or if you're ill or if you resent the person speaking or sitting next to you or the hotel or something, change that to something where you say like it's all perfect. That is what li means. It's an inner state of politeness. And then the heart opens. That's real openness of the heart. And then you can see things that you didn't see before. Okay? So it is li means the insight and the quality and the ray that gives you the gift of sacred living, where everything you recognize as whole and connected and full of meaning and purpose, and the which is opposite of the systematic irreverence that we often have in modern science, you know, shooting things into, you know, animal experiments, extracting all kinds of resources, burning them, and thinking we can treat the world in a certain way, and we're entitled to that. That is, because it's just a dead thing. It doesn't have any energy or consciousness behind it, and I'm on some higher plane, and it can do with it whatever pleases. So from a certain perspective, medicine we are talking about is always not just Yishui, which is the character Yi for medicine, is actually a combination in Chinese of a box that has an arrow in it, that's a symbol for an acupuncture needle, or a stone needle in ancient times, a massaging or guiding hand, that stands for massage in Qigong, or Daoyin, as they called it, like guiding the energy along the meridians, and then a big jug of alcohol at the bottom, which stands for food and herbs, because the earliest decoctions in China, they were tinctures. And so Yi is never just Yi is medical techniques, it's always Yi Dao, or Dao Yi. It is a medicine, it's Dao medicine, it's consciousness medicine, it's spirit medicine, it's energy medicine. And the body is being looked upon as, like these Wang Feng Yi practitioners, it's so simple, that practice. I just came back from this two-week retreat in China in the monastery where Zen Buddhism originally originated from. Now it's a distant monastery that nobody remembers anymore, and with this lovely community in there, and people emerging, you know, like, and that one of the insights that the instructor gave from this lineage, who was in his early 70s, was Shen Shi Zai Dao Zhi Qi, meaning what is your body? Your body is not a vessel to have as much self-indulgent fun as you can muster in this life, but your body is a ritual vessel to contain and bring into consciousness the energy that created you in the first place. And if you are in resonance with that and fulfilling that mandate, then you're living a life in integrity. And then you have true earth. You can really got something that you can rely upon, and your body say, will say, this is a life worth living, and all of your immune stuff is going to kick into gear. Very much like when you're in love, those first 2 months or so. It's like you fear nothing. You're not afraid of death the one time, and you're just like, wow, you know, it's like this rocket ship in your back or so. But then, you know, so it, you need to transform that into some kind of a way of being in love with the universe itself. The Sufis have this concept of what they call the beloved. You know, everything. What is the beloved? The beloved is a state. Every person you look at is the beloved. The universe itself, the person who hits your car from the behind, that is the beloved. It's, even that is beautiful, purposeful, and recognized as such. Okay? And that is a type of kung fu. That's the real martial arts. That's practice. Without practice, you're not going to get there, because guess what? You emerge from that two-week silent retreat, even out of the cave after 3 years. Boom, you meet something, and the universe says, you think you hot stuff? Let's give you a test. And boom, you're emotionally triggered, and then it's somebody else's fault again. So it's everything is a test, and everything helps you walk. On your level, helps you this. On the sage's level, I don't care, you know, how big the turban is that people are wearing, but even those people, they have challenges even bigger than ours, because at that level, it takes more to kind of get you riled up and keep you walking, because that's what Tao means. Tao also means a path of cultivation. If you don't keep walking on that and says, I'm already there, then you're in trouble. You know. So everything is process. All right, so this has, of course, deep consequences in diagnosis and treatment, meaning real holistic medicine means we're diagnosing energy and spirit. When we're treating, that's all we treat, to, of course, affect a difference in the physical world, but by going to the root. That is why we're drawn toward this medicine. But then even, we had this round table yesterday, and Nanlu has this remarkable way of talking in completely unadorned ways about, how these things are. I love that about him. And that is that even the profession of Chinese medicine, indeed, is we are, I go around and say we are sort of, King Midasing people and putting lenses on these enthusiastic young people's eyes, so that in the end they just become another modern practitioner. But he says, he calls it more directly and says, those schools are murdering schools. They're murdering the spirit schools. And that is true. It's like in that profession, you have, in the profession of most holistic medicine, you've got this people who just, they feel drawn towards something and they don't know what it is. And it is energy and spirit and consciousness and healing through that. And then if all you learn is rote memorization of points and herbs and you don't know why you're using them, and you get explained, this works because it has anti-inflammatory such and such biomedic molecules in it. And you put a needle into people and you excrete epinephrines, and that's why it works. And actually, sham acupuncture is just as good as real acupuncture, because you're still going to excrete those epinephrines. Then how could you not get terribly bored? How could your enthusiasm not be stifled? And let's have me quote like two of my Chinese colleagues in China. Now itself, you're actually allowed to say these things without getting arrested. My dear colleague Liu Lihong says in his book Sukao Zhongyi, Rethinking Chinese Medicine, that he published in 2003, and that now has sold more than 1 million copies, is the best-selling Chinese medicine book ever, because it's making a political statement. He says, we are tired to live in this world that is Marxist materialism or scientific materialism. Our heart is hungering for more, and the medicine that comes out of that and the quality of life that comes out of it is no good. You're saying it's so good and you're proving it in the lab, but then why is it that a good doctor can cure cancer in Chinese medicine, and the average 99% of us, we say, oh no, that immediately needs to send those back to the regular physician, where they're coming from. And so he says, my own students, this is Liu Lihong speaking, in this Sukao Zhongyi book, my own students all tell me about a common sentiment of theirs. During their first years at school, they are all still enthusiastic and full of trust in the merits and efficacy of their medicine, which is traditional Chinese medicine. But during the final year of their internship, everybody gets thoroughly disillusioned and loves all of their initial love and enthusiasm for the medicine. Why? One reason is that the practice of Chinese medicine that they get to observe is entirely different from their ideals. Almost in all colleges and universities of Chinese medicine, the practice of our medicine has become an act. The practitioners who administer it have no faith at all in the efficacy of the medicine, and when they are presented with a slightly more difficult case, they eagerly start using Western drugs or add a bit of Chinese medicine herbs to the Western medicine regimen to give the pretext of a traditional treatment. And here's Li Zhicheng, who is not more of an academic person, but he also tells it very straight, not as good as a transmitter as Liu Lihong. Therefore, most people don't know of him, but he's also excellent. He said, it is sad to see that because of several decades of wasted efforts and misguided energy, he's talking about traditional Chinese medicine being absorbed by Western medicine and studied from a Western perspective and double-blind clinical studies and all of that things. The core essence of Chinese medicine has virtually been lost by the ignorant people who, from the top of their lungs, have been chanting the mantra of modernization. Even though the outer shell of Chinese medicine education is still there, the tall buildings, the books, the students, the instructors, and the herbs that fill the markets in abundance, the real science of our medicine, that's what Zhang Xicheng calls medicine is philosophy, the classics, especially the true essence of our theoretical foundations, has been lost almost in its entirety. What do the theoretical foundations discuss? Energy. How do you diagnose and treat energy and the consciousness behind it? Or has become little more than an empty slogan. 求木之长者必固其根本. This means if you want a plant to grow tall, you have to take care of its root. This root that is in our medicine, that is the theoretical foundation of our field, meaning the classics. A flourishing without root will be like an empty shell without hun or por, without any kind of spirit inside of it. So in classical medicine, therefore, we look at the shen directly. If you can do that, you're so-called shangong, you top-level physician. But if you're not, which most of us aren't, including I am not, still we have this amazing science of imagery and symbolism, which says everything is a sign. Everything in life is a sign. Everything on the surface of your body is a sign. Every pulse picture is a sign. Every eye picture is a sign. Every face picture is a sign. Every symptom in your whole body is a sign. I remember this case where one of my beloved teachers who was in his 90s, and he was a specialist in treating schizophrenia, and they had this woman brought in, and of course you ask them where is it hurt, and you know they think they are Pocahontas or somebody, the princess of England or something, and can't give you an answer. And so after treating her for 10 days with acupuncture and herbs, he was like, I'm getting frustrated, she's still not coming out of it. And he said to the assistant, said, take all of her clothes off. And we didn't understand that because especially in China, it's sort of a cultural taboo there with nudity. And he examined every inch of her skin until he found that little rash on the Taiyang channel in the back. And he said, bring me a plum blossom needle. And he hammered away on that rash. And after a minute and a half into it, she woke up out of her state and said, who am I? Who are you? What am I doing here? So she kind of woke, you know, immediately. So that was not only that place was showing symbolically where's the congestion, something in the Taiyang channel, but it was also showing directly where you need to treat. Because the body is holding up, you know, a symbol, a sign, an image, which the Chinese use the word elephant for. Look at me, you can't miss it. It's as big as a house, you know. So if you go to the doctor and say, I have this and that, don't worry about it. I have your blood picture. I don't need to hear about it. Talk to your psychologist about that. All of this is your body 100% accurately holding up a big billboard saying, look at me. This is what's wrong with me. So, and there is lots of in our medicine, what we do, rather than working with the science of symbols and symptoms and the pulses and all of these things that we've been taught, we go like, oh, the patient comes in, I have all of this suffering, we want to send them right back because we're afraid. What if you have cancer? What if you have MS or so? Lots of people I observed in China, including famous people, they said, I need to have a Western diagnosis first, otherwise I can't help you. Those are two different sciences that can work very well together, but you don't need to know Ebola virus, AIDS, etc. You have a symptom, you have a pulse, you have a sign, it shows you what the energy is, you can treat that energy behind that disease. To the extreme where I have my dear teacher, Dr. Tseng, who's now 85 years old, and when I observed with him in the countryside, he was already retired, but he made this clinic in the countryside in Sichuan just for me, so I could learn what I'd learned at his kitchen table. I saw him treat this person who really had tremendous edema in his leg because he had a grapefruit-sized tumor from a classical seminoma in his lower abdomen that's pressing on the lymph, and the patient had been rejected for operation and treatment by the biggest hospital in town and therefore thought, what is this little alley doctor in the village can't help me get rid of that tumor, so I'm not going to tell him about this, I'm just going to say, get rid of the swelling in my leg. So he looked at the symptom, he felt the pulse, and then slowly, slowly, the swelling would go away. And then the guy came back 6 months later and said, well, they told me I had 3 weeks to live, and now all of a sudden it's 6 months later, so I wanted to check out what was there. So I went to, I had a scan, and that tumor is not there anymore, and now I'm telling you that I had this tumor. So Dr. Tseng, who's not a saint, a shangong, meaning he can read energy directly, but he's very good with pulses. His teacher saw 400 people a day and said, don't talk to me. He was just focused on the pulse. He was like a master of reading people's energy by listening to their pulse, and then he would just prescribe a remedy, which is energy in plant form, to match their energetic problem. And so he was able to treat cancer without even knowing that person had cancer. That is sort of the ideal scenario, you know, that. So he gave him something basically that's called Fuzi Li Zhong Tang, which is tonify the center decoction with aconite. And the diagnosis was Pi Shen Yang Xu, which is yang deficiency of spleen and kidneys. And in that, you know, if you tell, that is a symbolic diagnosis that includes all of the anatomical things, the constitutional weakness, the nutritional deficiencies, the environmental toxicity, the life wounds that that person had, maybe some astrological lopsidedness that that person has not enough earth in his chart or so, family miasms, etc. Rather than, like Western medicine would go, is like go very detailed about what the biochemistry and the cell type, etc. is of this. You, with this symbolic way of capturing, you capture all of these things at the same time. Never think that your medicine is primitive because it's so, what is that? Spleen yang qi deficiency. You know, it captures all of these, even though the pituitary is not one of your 12 organs, it is included in the 12 organ networks that you work with. They are symbolic and include the billions of functions that you have. Modern science has this limitation, okay, that it goes more and more into detail, but the more you look, the more you find that you don't know. You open up bigger and bigger holes, and as one Nobel Prize-winning physicist, biochemist, said, if you were to calculate, would write down every chemical reaction that happens in a single liver cell in 1 second, it would take a person 24/7, 100 years to read all of that. So much is going on in there. So trying with a drug to research one chemical pathway in the liver and then interfere with that, you don't know what you're doing to all the other ones. You couldn't possibly fathom to ever run all these tests. So that's the benefit of this seemingly primitive holistic system, is you have this blanketing diagnosis that is organically capturing all of these other things, and then very importantly, you trust that that will adaptogenically only benefit the body. And that is also a type of kung fu. Trust and faith in our medicine is a kung fu, and that's the biggest thing in the very beginning. That's why the part of our science is transmission, you know, because in the beginning, we don't trust. It works, then we go, wow, that's great. But then again, you know, somebody else walks in the door and you go like, oh, I can't do it. Or this is, you know, really, they should do surgery instead or so, rather than giving it a try, you know, because lots of miraculous things can happen. Also, the body is so complex that no computer will ever be able to capture that. We have, if you take, as another Nobel Prize winning biochemist or biophysicist calculated, if you take a single cell and put it into a lab dish, and that's the speed of transformation or biochemical reactivity in that lab dish is diminished, not by a factor of 1 or 2 or 10 or 100 even, but by 1 billion in comparison to our body. This is not me saying that. That's some quote-unquote real scientist talking about that in real numbers. So how can you use a science that says this cures cancer in the lab dish, and then you put in the human body? Of course, it's a totally different ballgame, not just sort of different. It's easy to understand. It's easy to do the experiment. But what's the use of it if you put it in the actual body and it doesn't work that way? And that's precisely the reason why when we turn on the radio, another cure for cancer has been found, yes, in the lab, maybe in a rat, not in a human being, which is infinitely more complex than both of those. And Chinese medicine, you're interested in that it works in the end. You know, so that is a system that has the promise of assessing something in that way. So back to the human being in Earth and the concept of faith. In every traditional system, whether it's religious system or mythological system, the human being is mythologically fashioned from clay. In the Bible, it is that way. In China, Chinese mythology is that way. The creatrix Nuwa took a clod of earth and formed the human being and breathed into that. And so that is the symbolically saying that as human being, we are animal matter. We are the chemistry in our body is that of a rock and a plant and an animal. But there is something different about that we are more than a rock. There is a consciousness type of energy that wants to know, who am I? Why am I alive? How can I give back to the universe? It is a conscious living. And so that is that 2 + 3, energy and matter, spirit moving in the animal body. Number 5, which is in Chinese evolution, in the Confucian classics, is the earth. The number 5 is the number of the human being. The water creatures go with the number 1, the fish, etc. The feathered creatures, the birds, go with the number 2. The furry creatures, they go with the number 3. The armored creatures, like turtles or so, they go with the number 4. And the naked creatures, which is epitomized by the human being, they go with the number 5. In Chinese numerology, which is a type of science, 5 is earth. And so the human being is energetically is earth. You know, so that's why the Shouwen Jiezi, the first dictionary of China, says 2,000 years ago, xin, the entry of the heart, what is the heart? Ren xin ye, it's the human heart. Then it says tu zang ye, it's the earth organ. Some people also say it's the fire organ. So at the very beginning, we are human because we have a heart. Of course, the center of our being gotta be earth, because earth means center. The heart is our central organ, and it is that, if we listening to the voice of spirit, is that place that gets imprinted with that. You know, there were some people that were doing research on ancient artifacts by literally, you know, how you can nowadays, in the digital age, but there was before people would, you know, that, well, before, I mean, I'm sure some of you have a record collection, I'm not that old, but there was this research where people thought that maybe you can, there is, in the clay of ancient Greek pottery, you've got lots of filigrane little lines in it, and maybe if you play a recorder over it or a receiver over it, you can hear the conversation that the potter had 2,500 years ago in his studio. They'd got nothing but static, but that idea is similar. You know, that the earth records frequency, our heart is a recorder of spirit energy, therefore it's fire. Fire is talking about spirit that it contains, but that recording principle, that is earth. That's why the heart was first earth and secondarily fire. So among the five virtues, the one that as a holistic physician is most important for us and is completely contrary to the methodology of Western science is the virtue of xin, which is trust, which is faith, which is belief. All three of these words are considered the antithesis to scientific inquiry in modern science. And you precisely suppose you create science and experiments so that you don't need to rely on some kind of leap of faith. It's something that is, quote-unquote, supposedly proven. But it is should be our pride and our honor to, at the beginning of our studies, to cultivate as a deepest form of Kung Fu our belief. I saw you had this very, out there you have a stance where you have these beautiful cards there from the Traditional Chinese Medicine World Foundation, and the one that I got with a very nice note from Roselle is the character Chen. This is when I studied with my teachers, and I said, can I study with you? They said, we'll see. And some of them, they let me wait for 2 years before they taught me anything and tortured me with watching Chinese soap operas. And my wife goes like, let's not go there anymore. That's so boring. And what they were saying to me energetically is, 看你成不成, see how serious, how sincere is your heart about really learning that. Because if you're not sincere, it will mean nothing if I teach you those things. If I teach you and you have received the sincerity, I just say it once, and you will never forget it because it was so hard for you to get to this place. Okay? So yes, faith, it says underneath here, faith is the only gate to God's kingdom, or in the language of Chinese medicine, trust, faith, and the stability and integrity and the groundedness that comes from this is the only way how you'll ever learn something and how you connect to that world that we're trying to diagnose and treat, namely energy and consciousness. Because you can't see it in the beginning, you gotta have that leap of faith, and that's why there is all of this. That's why the element of transmission is so important in Chinese culture, in this science, is you need to have somebody who transmits to you on a physical level where you feel like you're going into resonance with a higher truth and your mind can't explain it, but you feel like it resonates so deeply that it is life-changing already for you to hear that. And so I'm always satisfied when my students say, I don't know why I'm walking out of this lecture mesmerized, but my mind says I didn't learn anything because I can't remember any concrete data. I'm saying, good, I'm happy. I just want you to be confused and I want you to be mesmerized. But it's not about the data. It's just the recognition there's some resonance there. So that's called transmission. And for that transmission, you need what the Chinese call xiao. Is the entire Confucian echelon of the classics they talk about. Xiao is this really stale virtue of what gets translated as filial piety. It's the nightmare of the modern post-60s person is to kind of do what your parents tell you to do. But in the biggest sense, it's Neijing chapter 1 and 2. It says, like, you live in this universe, you go with it, you thrive, and you be healthy. You go against that, you do your own show, you think you know better, you will get sick and you die early. You know, so it is a surrender, a recognizing that we are this drop of water in the universe, and by surrendering into the role of the drop, it's the only way to be the ocean, to be everything. We're trying to make that drop bigger, and fighting with the drops that are next to us is not ever going to work. And so that trust is the biggest type of kung fu that can bring you into a Shen realm, into a spirit realm, and enable you to be a top-level physician. The people who are able to do this kind of work, they don't do it in most cases because they practice this technique so often, but it's very often because they have the humility of saying, I know nothing. You tell me. You show me what is going on. And then all of a sudden, that heart, when you empty it, it's not the full vessel, but as the Taoists say, the empty vessel, it can be filled with true knowledge rather than prejudices and preconceptions and these ideas that come from preconceived notions. And then you can create miracles. Then you can do amazing things that Bernie Siegel talks about in all of his books already. When I was a cancer patient 20 years ago, I loved those books, you know, that anything is possible, and not just because 99% of patients can't do that, where you believe in something and all of a sudden your cancer goes away, you know it's possible. You know, and that is much better bedside manner than telling the patient, you're going to die anyway because the statistics says so, and you're doomed. You know, and the patient resents that, and it takes away the last bit of dignity, you know. And so right now I have this patient who is like this mother in her early 20s and doesn't have any money and doesn't have much education, but she walks in there and she just has this thing where she goes like, the doctors tell me I'm going to be dead in 3 weeks, but I have these children and I need to take care of them. They tell me I have stage 4 cervical cancer, hundreds of dots in my lung, and when she came she was already, she couldn't breathe, and the doctor said, you're suffocating from your cancer, you know, we treated that as pneumonia that came from the radiation, and then kept treating that. And I, you know, so what I always try in a case like this, I go, my mind says there's no way we're going to make progress with that. But I know from myself as a patient, it's a crime for me as the physician to say this person can't get better. I'm already planting an energetic seed. I'm using the power of my mind to cast a picture to this person who's paying me money to make her better. So I need to visualize that there's a miracle is going to happen. So you always want to watch your heart. Where are you there? It's not just what you do. It's not just what you say. It's what you think is energy. And it's already creating something. And so this is now a year later, and she is breathing fine, she's normal, and she's still got 500 dots in her lungs, and the doctors still say, you're gonna die, and you should have been dead a year ago, but she's completely defying the odds because those dots are there, but they haven't changed. It's really not cancer anymore because cancer is so scary because it grows like crazy. So this is in a certain way, the miracle, if it can happen with wheat, the future of the body, you know, written 15 years ago by the co-founder of the Esalen Institute, where it says, so disappointing. I really want to believe in energy. Every time I hear somebody, you can fly on a carpet, walk through a wall, it's not true. But then you still wrote a book that was a tomb like this of, you know, people being buried in New York City underneath a football field and still being alive after that in the middle of winter. And Maria von Connersreuth that you saw up there bleeding out of the stigmatist who bled her own blood 7 times the amount of her own body weight, and people from Harvard who don't believe that wanted to defraud her as a con artist, staying there with a trailer testing her blood. You know, if it's possible with one person, that is the possibility that is inside of all our bodies. So the That is Chinese medicine in the classics. Number one, teaching us a way and telling us the most important thing is energy and consciousness and the cultivation thereof. That is why it's so great at this conference, and that's what we're trying to do against the accreditation regulation at our school, that we have 300 hours of energetic cultivation in the curriculum, because that's the message of the classic, is develop the only scientific instrument that really matters, that is more sensitive than any space shuttle you could ever build or microscope, is your own body. And it's perception, Neijing, the classic of the introspective, the internal journey that allows you then to directly see the nature of reality, diagnose or treat it. But then secondarily, the classics, starting with the I Ching, they're a repository of symbols where people placed characters and words like messages in a bottle that said, if you can't see the energy directly, the nature speaks in symbols and you can read those symbols. Nature itself, the body of your patient, is symbolic. Just doesn't matter if you don't know, just feel the pulse, look at the tongue, listen to the symptoms, empty your heart, and you will. Don't try to look up in some kind of a Machiocha book what's in the end. What you're supposed to do is like let the, you have the answer inside of you with all that stuff that you learned. The only thing is you can't use it quite so rigidly. Not every headache is the same. Not every cancer is the same. So you need to blend that intuition and scientific part of your learning. And all of the symptoms in ancient China in the classics, they were symbolic in a certain way. You know that they, Shaoyang Zhi Wei Bing, Koku, Yan Gan Mu Xuan, it says in the Shanghanlun, the major herb classic, Shaoyang symptom is bitter taste in the mouth, dry throat, and blurry vision. Can you only use Xiao Chai Ru Tang, Minor Papillarum Decoction, which is the main remedy for that? No, it treats everything from mumps to ear infection to the common cold to breast cancer to urinary tract infections to lymphoma to leukemia. It's so many things. And these symptoms are symbolic for that the Shaoyang is like a hinge between the Taiyang and the Yangming. And because your eyes and your throat and your mouth, they're the only orifices that open and close like that. Shaoyang is actually the ears much more than the mouth is. That belongs to Yangming, but it is a symbol and it's a symbol for that shows us as long as there's a problem not with opening, which would be Taiyang, not with closing, which would be Yangming, but with the hinge in the door is stuck somehow. Use Xiao Chai Hu Tang. That is what that, if we have eyes to read, communicates to that. And it is a coherent scientific language using images to describe patterns of energy and consciousness that over time will create a certain physical reality and that we can use to for that. So in the end, I want to we maybe take another 10 minutes or so to finish up here. I am primarily, and I work with Qigong, I work with herbs, and within that, the message of the classics is always like this. Work with that which first and foremost treats the energy, because that is the message of the classics. Whatever you do, treat the root, okay? So in Qigong, you treat the root directly. You work with the mind, you work with your energy. Couldn't be more direct with that. With acupuncture, if you do it the right way, you're affecting your consciousness. And as we heard earlier, that is a whole other research project of mine, is to show that the acupuncture point names of ancient times are like messages in a bottle that show us what consciousness, what part of a consciousness can be affected. For instance, Lung 4, that is just Lung 4 doesn't tell us anything, but Xia Bai means it's the pure and carefree spirit and the idealism and the sense of justice that the Xia had. The Xia were the ancient Robin Hoods who roamed in the mountains, and they were, there's a whole novel about that called Shui Hu Zhuan, the robbers in the marsh, I think it's called, or the and it is like these outcasts, basically. And so anybody who's has Robin Hood syndrome or has something to do with criminal activity or is a stickler for rules, but administers justice in a way that's really then the end, not just, because that's really what these, that is a very real description. I'm not really, well, in the limited amount of time here to describe the power of this naming here, but the patient, when they tell you, in the West people like to talk, they tell you a story, and you can decode that story, and all of a sudden you go like, that's lung four. They tell me the story of lung four. Oh no, that's large intestine 11, because in regular TCM it's all like, oh, you cough, you've got asthma, any lung point will do. There's really almost no difference. So you use some kind of pre-prescribed, and it's the power of this medicine that even as a cookbook application, it still works. But you can be so much better if you learn this message in the bottle that the ancient symbol creators put in that acupuncture point name, and you go like, what did these words really mean to people 2,000 years ago? And they tell us about the consciousness and the function that lives, the spirit that lives in this point. And when I needle it, I wake up that point, that official that's fallen asleep here. And that is the same. And that's why the second part of the Nei Ching is called the Ling Shu, the magical pivot, which is which means you can, if you understand acupuncture correctly, you can do miracles. Somebody, you change, they want to commit suicide, you put a needle in them, if it's the right one, they start laughing right 10 seconds after you put that in there, and laughing about how ridiculous they were just a minute before. And or you can even see tumors shrink with just Qigong and acupuncture. Of course, for that you need to be really masterful. Now, I'm primarily an herbalist. For some reason, my Yuanfen brought me there, and I have a whole... within Chinese herbalism, there are certain herbs that are more yin. They are more, if you examine them in the lab, they're full of vitamins and stuff that Western medicine research recognizes, and those are heat-clearing and yin-tonic herbs. And it's precisely those that in modern TCM are constantly being prescribed. Whereas the yang-tonic herbs that directly affect your energy and your spirit in the most profound way, which would be herbally treating the root, like cinnamon, like ginger, and like aconite, they're getting less and less used, and they're just in the museum somewhere, especially aconite. And so I've, because this is not, like the herb cinnamon, for instance, in the ancient classic, it says this herb is tongshen. It opens up the energy of your spirit and connects you to that. So that's your number one herb for the liver and your number one herb for the heart. And it's a spiritual herb that was burnt as incense in the temple. You can use that for rheumatoid arthritis, sure, but you can use it for a common cold. But first and foremost, it's tong shen ming. It connects you to that other realm. And its very character is it's an herb that is like a gui. And that gui is a jade tablet that's square at the bottom and it's pointed at the tip, looks exactly like the tip of the cinnamon. And what do you use the jade tablet for? To correct to spirit, to connect heaven and earth in the temple. So it says in the very name, symbolically, this is an herb that works like, looks like a jade tablet, works like a jade tablet, and has that kind of effect. So I've, as a result of that, to honor that kind of herbalism, I created my own line of herbs, because people don't dare to use those herbs anymore, especially aconite, you know, those classical pearls. There's you're welcome to grab a whole manual and lots of writings about aconite, especially in the back. You're welcome to take one for free if you're interested. And aconite even more so. The ancient Chinese called the Bai Yao Zhi Zhang, the leader of the 100 herbs. So what is the word herb? The word herb is music. So this is the one beef I have with my very respected ancestor of Chinese medicine in the West, with Worsley, who didn't have a personal interest in herbs, but to say that herbs are material and only acupuncture is the real Chinese medicine, that is completely wrong. Because the Chinese, they looked at an herb as having a consciousness, and you would give it not for their material biochemical properties, you would give it for the energetic, spirit-affecting type of properties. So the word herb, yao, is yue. You can read it also yue. It's the same one as music. It's the same one as vibration. You give an herb, you give vibration. And you say aconite is baiyao zhizhang, it's the king of the 100 herbs, it's the master vibrator in the body, and it gives to you, because we only want to do something where the body can heal itself. That's real healing. And one of my teachers said, you give Chinese medicine is like playing soccer. You can dribble beautifully, but in the end, you got to shoot a goal. So goal medicine is spirit medicine, and herbalism is aconite medicine. He says, only if you affect the fire of Mingmen that then rises up to the heart do you affect directly the self-healing properties of the body. And aconite is amazing, but only if you use it processed, like it says in the classics, does it work that way. Otherwise, it's dangerous. And that's why we don't use it, because most of it, and that is why, as a scholar, I had to cross that threshold that I never wanted to cross, namely go into this jianghu world of, you know, I'm everybody now, you know, so we are all hawk, you know, here's like my classical pearls or something. That's sort of like what I would rather die than do that. But I had to import these things to use in my own clinic, and my students wouldn't use it themselves. They didn't. Whereas if I say, I guarantee you that this is safe to use, all of a sudden now people, I'm seeing 1,000 patients a day, not just 12 patients a day or 10 patients a day. And that is, I'm in full integrity with that. But so whatever you do in your medicine, in conclusion, treat the source. Whether it's with herbs or something within the practice of acupuncture, just because you're using needles, use it from a spirit perspective rather than an epinephrine excretion perspective, etc. And I come to the end of my time, and I want to thank you very much for being such a calm and enthusiastic audience. Thank you. Thank you.
Talk about a journey. Thank you. I have a new respect for sheep. I have great gratitude for your being here and for taking us through that, the depth and breadth of this medicine that you describe as spirit medicine, energy medicine, medicine of invisibility. It sounds magical, but perhaps because you talk about so beautifully the scientification of our entire existence, that this is such a refreshing, beautiful ability to open us to the other dimension that we actually live in, but you know, because of our day-to-day lives, we don't really see it or recognize it. So again, we're most grateful to have you on the unpolitically correct East Coast. So today we have a busy day. We're going to take a break, and then we have Taste of TCM. We have several afternoon workshops, which are terrific. Dr. Rinjin Zhao from Florida is here to talk about his work in TCM and cancer. And Thea Elijah is, we're also grateful to her for stepping in to do Stomach, Spleen, and Destiny. And Brother Seif will be talking about East-West perspective on mind-body medicine. So as you can see, we're all coming at it from many different angles in terms of body, mind, spirit. And this evening, I want to call attention to a networking event with Thai Sophia. If you don't know them, if this is your first time here, if you're not a Thai Sophia alumni, we also invite you to that reception. We met Bob Duggan and Diane Connolly several years ago. And what struck us about Thai Sophia is their orientation toward energy and something higher and deeper in this medicine, and we kind of species recognition. And so we are so honored to be their local partner, and they do a fabulous job, and I hope you will all go see what they're up to. Okay, so we'll regroup tonight. Oh, for Qi dancing. And I want to quote Heiner Fruhoff. I'm going to take your name in vain. Ritual without fun is not ritual. So come to Qi dancing, because we're going to have a lot of fun. Okay, so we'll see you later. Bye-bye.